The issue of steroids in professional baseball reared its ugly head again recently with the revelations that superstars Alex Rodriguez and Manny Ramirez were revealed to have used performance-enhancing drugs. Ramirez was suspended for 50 games this season, but has been playing for the last week with the Los Angeles Dodgers and seems to be receiving more criticism from members of the press than from opposing fans. Zev Chafetz is the author of the new book, Cooperstown Confidential, Heroes, Rogues, and the Inside Story of the Baseball Hall of Fame. In the second part of our interview, Chafetz says that there's been a hysteria promulgated by baseball writers about performance-enhancing drugs. In his book, he argues that the Hall of Fame is hardly a bastion of morality, and that sports writers should consider the players based on their performances on the field, not their behavior off it.
I think that the baseball writers have whipped up a hysteria over the issue of steroids, which is really quite amazing. And they've been, you know, following the lead of politicians in both parties. The writers were supposedly, who are supposedly experts, watched over the last 20 or 30 years as steroids became a very, very common substance in baseball. And they didn't see it. And they didn't report it, and they didn't know about it. So clearly, if these substances altered the very nature of baseball, as they claim, the writers were not very good observers of what they were supposedly reporting on. Or it's possible that they knew about it, and they didn't report it because they were protecting the players. Either way, they've been made to look very, very bad by this scandal. And I think that a lot of baseball writers have decided that they are going to get their revenge by portraying these guys who are using anabolic steroids or HGH or other things as degenerates or drug addicts or criminals against the American way. And, you know, it's childish, and it's also vindictive, and it's not a glorious record in the story of baseball journalism, which is not a glorious story to start with. On the issue of Barry Bonds, you know, the fans in San Francisco appreciate him, and there's another group that appreciates him, and that's the African-American fans of baseball, which is an ever-decreasing number. All the polls show this, that they think Bonds is getting a bad deal. The way that, let's say, Muhammad Ali did when he was banned from boxing, when he lost his license, or other transcendent black players and athletes have. And when Bud Selig, the commissioner of baseball, stood there watching him break Aaron's record with his hands in his pockets and a frown on his face, the message it sent was that, you know, to black America, that, you know, that the great transcendent black star of our time, the black Babe Ruth, if you like, wasn't good enough for the commissioner and won't be good enough for the Hall of Fame. That's just a way to lose, you know, to lose a huge segment of the American sporting public. And I think that writers like the one you mentioned, who go after A-Rod and who go after Manny and who go after the other great Hispanic stars, are going to wind up doing the same thing with Latino fans, which are the most, that community is probably the biggest baseball-loving community in the country right now. And once again, you know, if their heroes aren't good enough to be in Cooperstown with a collection of people who are there that we know about, and by the way, a great many guys in Cooperstown also use substances. There have been steroids in baseball since the 1950s.
Really?
Yeah, well, absolutely. And there have been amphetamines in baseball since the 1950s and 60s. And a great many of the most famous baseball players in the Hall of Fame used substances.
In fact, I think you allude to that in the beginning of your book when you were at the Hall of Fame ceremonies a couple years ago.
Yeah. Jane Forbes Clark, who's the sort of grand dame of the Cooperstown, her family owns the town and basically owns the Hall of Fame. And, you know, she's the third generation of heads of the board of directors there from the Clark family. Sort of in a la-di-da way, said that the guys behind her are these great gentlemen. She was standing with the 63, I believe, living Hall of Famers. And I looked at them and I saw, you know, a lot of guys who you'd love to have as your neighbor, and a few guys that you wouldn't want to meet in an alley on a dark night. You know, And there were people there who had, you know, all sorts of convictions. There were people there who, you know, had openly cheated, like, you know, Gaylord Perry throwing spitballs. And there were beanball artists, and there were drunk drivers, and there was a guy who went to jail as a drug dealer. And there was, you know, there was quite a collection of people. And, you know, I didn't care because I think the Hall of Fame should be a place that celebrates great baseball players and not great citizens. If you want to find role models, then, you know, go to church or wherever you go for role models, but not to Cooperstown. That's a place that should be reserved for excellence excellence in baseball.
Absolutely. I agree with you so much on that. So I have a last question for you, not related to your book, but I remember reading, I guess about a year ago or so, you did the with a cover story on Rush Limbaugh in the New York Times Magazine, where you broke the news about Rush's gargantuan $400 million contract. And that was a very interesting piece. Are you familiar with him? I mean, before you wrote the piece, I mean, it seemed like, because one knows he's not a big fan of the New York Times, he seemed pretty open about, you know, telling all to you in that piece.
Well, I had never met him before, no. But as a result of that piece, I'm expanding it and doing a book on him. I find him a very, you know, fascinating figure. Very obviously very important in the political world, especially on the Republican side of it. But I think in general, he's a phenomenon. You know, nobody has ever had an audience like and kept an audience like he has just by talking. So, and he was. I don't know if he was open with me or not. He was as open as he wanted to be at that time, and I was very happy to be there to record what it was that he said and was doing and so forth.